Okay, hey guys, welcome to How We Roll. I'm Joe, your keeper, and we are starting the second episode of Return to Innsmouth. Let's start with a character who didn't join us for the first one, Spencer. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your character?
My character is a PI. He is based in Boston, and he works out of his office to solve various cases and tries to make as much as he can from those cases.
And although you guys were briefly introduced last week, let's have a bit of a recap. Owen, do you want to introduce your character, Mick Tobin?
Mick Tobin is an Irishman who fought in the Irish War of Independence, but he was 15, 16, 17, kind of through that. He was kind of running errands, bringing medical supplies, not actually really fighting. Saw civil war on the horizon in Ireland after the War of Independence, went to America to become a doctor because of his experiences in the war. He's currently a student doctor at the Miskatonic University and lodger with Bartholomew Ormond. Also permanently on death's door as I play the game.
And last but no means least, Bartholomew Ormond or Osmond? Can we actually clear up? Is it Ormond or Osmond?
This really annoys me. Or Ormond. I haven't...
Ormond. Bartholomew Ormond. I don't think there's a correct pronunciation with a bastardized.
One of our fans suggested, I don't know if they're just trying to help us out, maybe it's Osmond in America and Ormond in Europe. Could that maybe explain it away?
I think he might be right. I think it's Bartholomew Osmond.
It's definitely been used three different ways. Like, we have Ormond, Ormond, and Osmond in the past 9 or 10 episodes because we drink. Most
that's a better explanation.
Drink, yes.
Okay, do you want to give us just a brief recap before we start?
I'm an Romanian aristocrat, educated at Oxford and Eton, of course. I'm a veteran of World War One, a enjoyer of the good life.
Fantastic. This episode is going to start 2 weeks after the events of Deadlight and of last week's episode as well. And we're going to start with you, Spencer. Over the last 2 weeks since the Deadlight incident, you've been involved in a case with the Boston PD. You return back to your office and you enter in through the door at about, let's say, about 7 o'clock on an incredibly cold, windy February night. As you sort of walk up the stairs, you're met by your secretary. Do you want to give us a brief description of her?
It's Sally. She's been working with me now for almost a year. Very attractive lady. She's blonde. She has quite a good head on her shoulders.
Quite a good head on her shoulders.
Okay. She's stood at the top of the stairs, sort of looking up. I kind of imagine it as, you know, kind of those sort of frosted glass windows with, like, Spencer Randall Private Detective Agency or something written across it in gold lettering. She's got her back to you as she sort of bends over to look up. And as you approach the stairs, the sort of flickering electric light sort of catch her in an extremely attractive pose. You find yourself stopping and staring at her, and she turns around and goes, "Oh, Mr. Randall. There are a couple of messages for you. Do you want to pick them up tomorrow, or?"
No, it's okay. I'm going to be here. I just want to browse through a few files. You can go ahead and lock up. I'll make my way out a little bit.
Okay, I'll see you tomorrow. She gives you a wink and sort of squeezes past you in the corridor and heads down the stairs.
I will say, I was imagining Sally in my mind lustfully until Joe's voice became associated with Sally. That killed the fantasy.
That's like, this is like an episode of, like, Dear Penthouse or Dear Playboy. That's the start of it. What is happening? Are we playing a new system? Unless she grows some talons or fucking tentacles or something. This makes no sense.
You enter your spacious office. There are a number of desks set up for not just yourself, but the junior investigators and Sally herself. Set upon your desk is your modern typewriter. And a couple of sort of sealed envelopes. You recognise Sally's handwriting upon the end of them. As you approach your desk, the lamplight from outside sort of illuminates the room, sending stark shadows, leaving dark patches. And you kind of move across the room and your feet echo across the bare floorboards.
On the way to my desk, I step off at my... there's a wine cabinet in the corner that I keep various bottles of, like, liquor, whiskey, rum, things like that in. I pour myself a small glass, carry on walking over to the desk, sit down, start perusing through the letters that I've been given.
Okay, they're both written in Sally's neat and tidy hand. The first one is a message from yesterday, and it's from Molly Smith. It seems that she's left a number of messages across yesterday, basically saying, I've been trying to get hold of you. Hector and Duncan disappeared almost 2 weeks ago, shortly after the baby was born, and there's been no sign of them. I think that's all from her. The second one is dated today and from 10 o'clock this morning. It seemed that Bartholomew Ormond's head butler phoned and basically is at his wit's end. He's absolutely sick, tired and worried by the erratic behaviour of Bartholomew and his recent lodger, Mick Tobin. It turns out about a week ago, one of the maids left after finding a mutilated pig in the upstairs study. The second maid left 2 days later after Mick Tobin screamed at her for touching or trying to touch some sort of jar or some sort of case. And the head butler was fired today when he tried to tidy up Bartholomew Ormond's bedroom. Apparently, he opened the door, it was immediately slammed by Bartholomew Ormond, and he was told his services would no longer be needed.
Do I know this butler at all?
He's probably served you a drink or two.
Okay, so I probably know him by first name. Right, okay, that is quite interesting. I look over at the clock, what time is it?
So let's say it's about 7:30, pitch black outside, and it's starting to snow pretty heavily.
Right, okay. Can I give Molly a call?
Yeah, you certainly can. Okay, you contact the operator, who connects you straight through to the Duncan Smith residence. The phone rings out, and after about 40 seconds, the operator goes, I'm very sorry, sir, but it appears that no one is answering at this residence.
Oh, okay then. Never mind. Right, so I hang up the phone and then I redial for Dave Bartholomew Ormond.
So the operator puts you through and the phone begins to ring again. Okay, the first time again, at least 40 seconds, the phone rings out, no sign of any answer. I'm very sorry, sir. It seems it's not your night tonight. Would you like me to try either of the numbers again?
No, that's fine. And I put down the phone. I finish, sit back in my chair and I finish my glass of whiskey. And, look out the window into the night sky where it's still snowing. And think I should probably take a little visit, over to the house and see what's going on for myself.
Okay, you, so this has been 2 weeks. What car are you driving?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I thought you might ask me this. I've managed to score myself quite a nice little deal on a Ranger 4 model.
How convenient. Am I the only person who's that rich with fucking an amount of drink stored away somewhere I live?
I'm not a man of ample means or lots and lots of money, although my business is doing quite well. It's not quite as well known as the typical Model T Ford, which is basically everywhere by this time. But it is a car that is more of a touring car. It was fairly popular and it was on at a great deal. How could I say no?
If I could give out XP for actually doing some research, I would do it right now.
I'm currently Googling the range to see what it looks like. It's a pretty sick looking car. And every listener is going to do that because, like, how...
The cars, I tell you. The guns, I tell you. The laws, I tell you. And he gets it for naming the first car.
Yeah, but he's got a great accent. You've got an asshole American accent.
Well, fuck you very much, you Irish cunt.
Okay, your feet crunch through the snow as you step into your... is it a brand new car or is this a second-hand acquisition?
No. It's a second-hand acquisition.
The omens are good. Your key goes into the ignition and it immediately starts. You begin to drive reasonably swiftly through the snowy Boston streets. And this is to the Ormond residence you're heading.
Yes.
Do you want to give us a brief description of your kind of four-floor apartment, building, house, townhouse?
Townhouse. It's a Boston brownstone. One floor beneath where the kitchens and the servants are. Three upper floors with a drawing room and sitting room on the first floor. My bedroom currently resides on the third floor. I have my study on the second floor, and of course, my Irish companion has a small room there as well.
Okay, you pull up outside. There is Dave's You pull up outside, and Bartholomew Ormond's incredibly expensive and lavish coupe is parked outside the house. Do you want to give me a quick spot roll?
Say no.
I roll a 13 out of 85.
Okay, so that's an extreme success. You notice that the car itself has an incredibly thick layer of snow, much more than you'd expect from just the recent flurries. This car has not been moved in at least 10 days, maybe a little bit longer. The house itself is unusually dark. Bartholomew Ormond is an incredibly extravagant member of Boston society. Normally all lights are on, music is blaring. He is not shy on expenditure of his electricity. Looking up at the house, every window is dark, apart from possibly a small flicker on the top floor window, which, although you've never been there, you believe to maybe be his bedroom. You also notice on the steps leading up to the door, there is something staining the steps, although it's partly covered with snow. The door itself is closed.
Can I wipe the snow away from the doorway to see what this suspicious thing I've seen
okay.
is?
Okay, you walk across the pavement towards the steps. It's worth saying that the steps go up about 6 foot, and to the left of the steps there's kind of a drop going straight down to where the windows are to the basement floor, which is the kitchen, as Bartholomew said earlier. You wipe the snow away, and it appears to be mud staining the steps, but the mud itself is incredibly sort of viscous and has a real farmyard smell of it. It's nothing you'd normally find in Boston itself. Certainly not, you wouldn't find it walking on the streets anyway.
Hmm. I walk up to the door and is it a bell or is it a knocker that you have?
There's both. There's an incredibly ornate electric bell, which he has shown off on a number of occasions. And there's also an ornate door knocker, which has an occult theme to it. Bartholomew, do you want to describe your door knocker?
Well, this is Boston society, so one can't be too overt about such things, despite the burgeoning interest amongst my peers. So it is simply a ram's head with curled horns with the round knocker in its mouth.
Reaching up towards it, you definitely get a sense of foreboding with the the links with Lucifer and the devil and stuff.
My hand reaches up to hold the knocker, and then I kind of rethink it and pull my hand away and try the bell instead.
And then the trap door opens underneath your feet, and the Scooby-Doo theme song goes!
I want to keep this tension up, so I'll be cutting that bit too. Or maybe not, that's quite funny. Okay, the bell rings long and loud. From upstairs, you think you hear something. In fact, give me a listen check.
Ooh. 66 out of 33.
You're sure that you caught something, a sound from deep within the house, but you're not entirely sure where it came from. It could have been high up, it could have even been downstairs in the servants' quarters. You're not 100% sure. But there, after a few minutes, there's still no answer. The snow is getting much heavier, and you wrap your coat firmly around you as a stiff winter wind really kind of freezes you right to the bone.
How tall up is this window with the glimmering light in?
3 floors above you.
Oh, so I probably wouldn't be able to flick a small stone up at the window.
The kind of window just to your left, which you know to be his sitting room, the curtains are closed, although you can see through a crack that there's no lights within. I will say this is a corner house, so you it is quite possible and quite easy to go around the back if that's something you want to do.
Yeah, I'll take a quick wander around the back.
Okay, it's a corner house. It's gated, so to get into the it wouldn't be called a ginnel in America, really. That's a bit of a Manc thing. The alleyway behind, to get to the sort of servants' area and the kitchens and things, is gated, and a high fence surrounds the back.
Okay. Do I have to navigate this gate and fence, or am I already around there?
So imagine you've gone... So from the front door, you've walked to your left... You've turned a corner to the end of the house, as it were, and there's a high fence with a gate in it.
Okay, can I check to see if the gate is locked?
It is not.
Okay, can I push it open and proceed?
Okay, the gate leads to a small alleyway. The stink of refuse is high, and this is like a really meaty stink. Like, this isn't what you'd normally find with just general detritus and rubbish or garbage. Sorry, we're just catering to our American audience. There's a small stairway leading down, probably to the servants' quarters and kitchen. Looking up at the house, you see a number of windows across the 4 floors if you count the downstairs. All windows are dark and foreboding, almost like hollow eyes staring out into the winter night.
Is there dustbins?
Yes, there are. There's a number of dustbins, and from which the very meaty charnel smell is originating from.
Can I try and look into the dustbins to try and find the cause of the smell?
As you get closer, the buzzing of flies... immediately takes you to the right bin, and you lift up the door. Can you lift up the door? You lift up the lid. Can you make me a sanity check?
I love how annoyed Joe gets when he mispronounces something, especially because he's drinking, when most people don't give a fuck.
95 out of 32.
Okay, you find yourself letting out an involuntary scream, and you fall back into the puddle of snow after being scared by the beheaded body of a pig, its rotting eyes staring up at you out of the bin. It's covered in maggots, and when you kind of recover yourself and stand up, you see that its entire face is beset with strange carvings, whirling patterns and strange lettering.
Cthulhu Mythos,
yeah,
check.
Go for it.
Oh, good roll, good card.
If I can find it.
Do you have any Cthulhu Mythos?
16. And I roll a 3!
It's our first success in a Cthulhu Mythos roll. It's a great day for the podcast.
Woohoo! Okay, these are sacrificial runes. You know full well that beyond reality itself, the mere thickness of a shadow away, there are beings that are not of this world. How can we describe this? I hadn't prepared for you to actually see the Cthulhu Mythos roll. I thought I'd have a Lovecraftian croak ready for this. I don't at all. Basically, there are ways of sating these strange, inhuman, alien monsters, ways of summoning their power or summoning their services. It looks like some of these runes may be linked to some strange creature known as Shub-Niggurath. Again, the name jumps out just as you see the whirling patterns on this pig. You're not entirely sure what it means, but it does send a chill up your spine as you consider what's come out of your brain from who knows where.
Shit has got really real.
Holy crap. Well,
find it somewhat ironic that a pig's head is something you might actually find in my real
as an actual chef, yeah.
And my Facebook status picture is me with two pig's heads.
It's also on our Twitch stream where you can check us out at www.twitch.tv/HowWeRollPodcast to see that picture.
Smooth, guys!
Shub Niggurath is often associated with the phrase "the black goat of the woods with 1,000 young."
All right, so I shall pick myself up and try and recompose myself, and just slide the lid of the bin back over and pretend I never saw that. Can I check the downstairs door to the servants' quarters to see if it's open?
Okay, not only is it open, but it seems that it's been banging in the wind, and as you approach, it does fill you again with an even further sense of foreboding. This strange knocking is almost tapping out a message to you, or banging out a message to you. You enter a rather large and generous kitchen. It's almost completely pitch black, and from the open doorway, the only thing you can see or make out through the shadows is a small scattering of snow and a large table in the centre of the room. You can hear the distant hum of a large electric freezer, and you can smell some sort of very expensive spilt spice.
Right, I am going to pull out my flashlight from the inner pocket corner of my jacket and shine it into the darkened room.
Okay, the first thing your flashlight picks out is the large aforementioned table. There's a large butler's sink, and in the far corner you see the aforementioned refrigerator humming away merrily. There's also a gas hob and a number of shelves generously stacked with spices. Having never been down this far in Bartholomew's house, you're not entirely sure where the two staircases lead to. One is immediately to the left of the door and much smaller than the other one. The far side of the room is a large staircase leading directly up.
Can I look around for, say, like a light switch or some sort of light source?
Yeah, you shine your torch around and there's a light source by the larger set of staircases on the other side of the room.
Right, so I'll go over to that and turn the lights on.
And click, nothing happens. The room is still plunged in eerie darkness, your torch picking out strange shadows and odd shapes.
Right. I'm going to make my way up the stairs and into what I assume the bottom floor of the house.
Do you want to go up the smaller staircase, or do you want to go up the larger staircase you're stood next to?
I will take the larger staircase.
Okay. The larger staircase leads steeply straight up, ends in a large door. There's no lock apparent. It is closed.
Okay. So, I will go up to the door and push it open very slowly whilst trying to peek around the edge of the door.
Okay, the light from your torch briefly illuminates the corridor beyond. You recognise it very clearly as the entranceway to Bartholomew's large townhouse. Opposite you is a doorway that leads into his kind of living area. And to your left, if you kind of almost sort of walk out, turn left and turn left, is the staircase that leads up further into the house. To your right, there's something odd about the wall. You'd never really kind of noticed it before, but it seems slightly discoloured. Having never come to this end of the corridor, because obviously you either go up the stairs towards the study or you go straight into the living area, you'd never approach this area, and there's something off about it.
Can I take a closer look?
Yeah. You don't need to. At this distance, obviously, as a PI, you have a certain skill set. You see that it's not actually a wall. It's almost like a hidden doorway, hidden in the plaster.
I cannot resist to look at this closer.
Okay.
Okay.
Pushing it open, it opens freely and easily. You seem to have found a set of servant stairs. To your right is the thin stairway that leads down to the kitchen, and next to it is another thin stairway heading up further into the house. This is obviously a way that Bartholomew's maids and butler moved around the house without being seen. To your left is a doorway which must lead into the living room, however you didn't know it existed. So, been in the living room a number of times, this must be a way for the butler to enter unseen and without bothering anyone.
I am going to decide to take this smaller, slightly more incognito staircase up into the further echelons of the house.
The door slides open with oiled ease, and you're greeted with the sort of landing of the first floor of Bartholomew Ormond's house. To your right, you know the door leads directly into his study. To your left is a staircase leading up into his sleeping area, to which you've never been, and directly in front of you is a large Persian rug. By day, you've never noticed before that the strange and intricate designs seem to flow together to make an almost, well, not garish, but freaky and unnatural pattern. You find yourself almost trying to avoid looking directly at it. As soon as the door opens, you are also greeted with a very, very pungent smell. The nearest that you've ever come to is on your rare visits to church where incense is being burned, and it seems to be originating from the floor above you. There also seems to be a faint noise, singing or chanting, coming from, again, almost directly above you.
Right.
As you sit there pondering, you also hear the sound of muffled footsteps directly above you again.
Coming up directly above. Can I, without the torch this time, creep up to the next level up?
Which staircase do you want to take? The main one or the servant's one?
I'll take the servant's one.
Okay. You walk up again the very, very steep and creaky staircase. Can you give me another stealth one?
Oh, goodness. This is where I lose it. Yep, 79.
Okay. One of the steps itself seems to be loose, and as you put your weight on it, the entire step shifts under you, and you found yourself having to sort of almost drop to your knees to save yourself from falling and make quite a loud bang. You hold yourself steady for a moment, but there's no additional sound from above.
Okay, can I do a listen check?
Yeah, go for it.
This is so tense.
I fail 61 out of 33.
There is still the sound of kind of muffled singing or chanting. Probably chanting is a much better name for what you can hear, and the occasional muffled footsteps, but you can't hear any more than that.
Okay. I get back up to my feet, and again, from inside the jacket, I pull out my trusty pistol, my big revolver, and I carry on, trying to be as quiet as I can, continue to creep up the stairs.
Okay. The servant's landing you're greeted with at the top of this last set of stairs is much bigger. Directly in front of you are two doors. One of them is open, and you see beyond that it's a reasonably large bedroom. Clothes are scattered everywhere, blankets on the floor, and you recognise a doctor's bag lying on its side that you know to belong to Mick Tobin. The other door is firmly closed, and to your left is another one of these secret doors that presumably leads into the rest of the house and Bartholomew Ormond's sleeping area.
Can I take a peek into this sleeping area? I'm just looking for my companions at the moment. And at the moment, with the shit I've seen so far, I'm kind of questioning as to their safety.
Okay, Mick Tobin, do you want to describe... obviously, Bartholomew Armand is allowing you to stay in one of his unused servant bedrooms. Do you want to describe how your room looks and what's in it? Owen, that's you.
Sorry, say again. completely missold then, I'm not going to lie. Sorry. Describe the bag. Sure.
Can you, so Bartholomew Armand has allowed you to stay in one of his unused servant bedrooms. Do you want to describe your room and what's in it?
So, I came here as an unknown lodger. Armand didn't know who I was. We've become friends since moving in. Fascinated by War of Independence stories and World War stories, trading stories, we've become friends. But my room is nothing like his lifestyle or his house. It's just a bare minimum servant's quarters. It has a green flag hanging over the bed with a gold harp emblazoned on it, which would have been the Irish Free State flag for the War of Independence. Letters scattered opened on the bedside locker, stuff from home, you know, mother father kind of correspondence, various medical books and journals, as I'm a student, scattered across a desk with balled up bits of paper where I've clearly been studying, taking notes. Cigarettes in an ashtray, piled high like I've been studying for a while. And a whiskey bottle, half drunk, a glass there. But just, it's essentially hooch, not like the normal stuff you'd see Armand drinking. And then my medical bag and various just bits of clothes. It's a really unkept room like a 23-year-old student would have even to this day, pretty much. Half-eaten sandwich by the bed, maybe.
Well, with that description, I'm going to look over at the bed to see if there's anyone in it, or if it's been slept in, or if it's made, but I'm guessing at this point it's not been made.
Feel free to finish the sandwich.
And thank the Lord the blacklights have...
I wish I was that popular. The rumours around the local area with you, there's no women visiting this house.
Not with pigs' heads in the bin and shit.
Oh yeah, that was what I meant, yeah. And my room looks like it's been, like, it's very much recently been lived in, and, like, everything's just been dropped at the drop of a hat.
So, everything's messy and...
Yeah, like the okay. Mary Celeste, like, it looks like I've been recently here. Maybe there's even a cigarette smouldering in the ashtray.
But there's no sign of Mick Tobin.
He's definitely not in this room. It's too small. There's no way he could physically hide.
Right, okay. Okay, so from this point, I will carry on my search further up. I assume the last floor is the main bedroom?
This is the last floor. So you go back into the main kind of servant's landing. There is another door, which you presume to maybe lead into the head butler's bedroom. And then there's the sort of more secret door, which would lead into the main house. You're on the top floor right now.
So this is the final floor. Right, okay. I am going to look around. Did you say there was a door to my left and a door to the right?
There's three doors in this room, or this sort of landing. There's the door that you've been into, which leads into Mick Tobin's bedroom. There's a closed door, which presumably leads into the head butler's bedroom. Then there's the sort of more hidden door, which leads into the main part of the house.
Okay. For the main bedroom, is there like a keyhole or anything that I can look through?
No, there's not. I mean, it is a door, but obviously it's partly concealed or mostly concealed within the plaster itself. So from the other side, it doesn't look like a door at all.
Right. Again, I'm going to pull this open and peek inside.
Okay. You are greeted with the top floor of Bartholomew Ormond's townhouse. There are a number of incredibly rare antiques scattered on this large landing. Below you, again, is another disturbing Persian rug. There's a number of sort of Ming vases and some sort of strange statues of various occult and ancient design. To your left is the staircase leading directly down. And to your right is the door that presumably leads through into Bartholomew Ormond's bedroom. From beyond that door is a much louder singing, and the smell of incense is much stronger. Directly in front of the door is a circular rug, looking a bit out of place as it kind of covers over the Persian rug, and it's just of a plain blue design.
Okay. I slowly make my way over to the door that leads to the main bedroom of the house, where I hear the chanting and some form of life.
Is your torch on or off at this point?
At this point, it's still off from when I was trying to creep. I don't want to give myself away. I'm not sure who or what is in this house. I'm possibly looking at some weird shit going on, so I just want to make sure if there is anyone here that's not Bartholomew or not Mick, then I want to at least have a drop on them if I decide to do anything from that point.
Okay. You move towards the bedroom door. With your torch off, you see that there is a flickering light shining through the keyhole. It's quite a large keyhole. There's also no light coming from outside, as the curtain on this landing is firmly closed.
Okay, I will try and have a look through the keyhole.
Okay, you kneel on the kind of the blue circular rug and begin to look through the keyhole. You feel that you've almost crossed a boundary. Something strange has happened. Can you give me a Cthulhu Mythos roll?
Come on, Cthulhu Mythos. 38 out of 16. Not too bad, but not close enough.
Your knowledge with the Cthulhu Mythos discusses certain boundaries. There are different realities that exist, and a trained practitioner can almost sense and control when crossing between them. And you feel when you stepped onto this rug, into this circular rug, you've crossed one of these boundaries.
A gunshot rings out.
A small hole appears in the centre of the door, spraying light into the landing. You look down at the spreading pool of blood across your white shirt. There's another cannon-like sound as another bullet takes you full in the chest. Again, a spray of light from the whole door takes you, sprays across you, and you can see your white shirt turning increasingly red. The door is thrown open, and the smell of incense and chanting is louder still.
Mick Tobin walks out holding an urn, a gun, with this weird design on his forehead. Just stands over Spencer. Did it work? Did it work? Oh God, what have we done? Did it work?
Okay, looking into the room as you kind of drop to your knees. You see that there is a number of huge candles burning, and they're providing the majority of the light. There's a number of braziers burning some strange incense, and both Mick Tobin and Bartholomew Ormond dressed in strange black robes with whirling designs that you recognise from the pig carcass. Speaking of which, there is another pig carcass flat in the middle of the floor. Bartholomew Ormond is above it with a huge sacrificial dagger, obviously just being plunged into it. He begins running towards you.
Did the ritual work? Damn it! I told you to wait until I'd finished the chant.
You'd finish it. You definitely finished it. I mean, how do we know if it worked? How do we know if it worked?
Well, I just let me consult some of my texts here. You're a medical man.
I dropped to my knees, kind of half panicked, but not in shock or freaked out. I'm clearly aware this is
blood is everywhere. And this isn't like the kind of normal red blood of a cut. This is dark black arterial blood.
Spencer, what did you? How did it feel? What was it like? What did you feel?
Strangely enough, you were not in any pain at all.
That's a fairly quick reaction. Got bullet holes,
Not hurting.
If anyone accuses us of being
they're
scripted,
talking to me.
This is an amazing moment.
I
can see your face, Aaron. You love Spencer so much, I feel like I kicked a dog.
I kind of look and look back up at them. Am I in any way in pain?
No,
or?
Not at all. Not at all.
I don't feel like a sense of like everything's going dark around me or.
Right. You can rip open your shirt. You find there's nothing there. There's no mark at all. All the blood's there, but there's no bullet holes at all. Bartholomew, how many magic points did you use in the casting of this ritual?
I'm actually going to make a roll.
Am I safe? Can I assume that Aaron isn't going to return fire? Because that was a genuine concern that I might actually get shot to death. That was a genuine concern he'd shoot me.
It did cross my mind. let's put it that way.
Oh my god, I was so happy I didn't die.
I used 3.
Okay. You believe that you've probably used about 2/3 of the power of this ritual on Spencer. He should still have some protection left. Can you lose 4 sanity, please, Bartholomew?
And so
4 sanity. One more, and you would have had a fucking mania.
I'm at this point in shock. I can't believe it.
He's also in shock in game, not just in real life.
Yeah, no. Literally in game and out. Can one of you please tell me what the hell is going on here?
Are you're okay? There's no mark. Bartholomew, it worked. I scream back at him, who's reading his text. The shield worked.
Well, of course it would. I mean, I was committing the ritual. The sigils on the pig are correct. We tried it on that poor girl, you know, my former employee. Of course it worked. I mean, I know she'll have some slight scarring around the ankle, but, well, that's just the
By the way, only my fuck-ups get edited out. You're safe.
That's simply the misunderstanding.
He's speaking in tongues. He's been possessed after doing the spell.
Simply a confluence of unfortunate events due to my misreading a certain sigil and your shit aim.
So, Spencer, I lift him to his feet, give him my hip flask and go, it's this spell. This spell we've had for like, God, if we classified our encounters as episodes, if we classified our adventures in episodes, I would say 9 episodes that Dave that Bartholomew has had in his back pocket. It's this spell we've had literally for an in-game year. I remember he told me how that priest kept wanting him to use it, and he never did. But like, I convinced him. You were protected by a dark magic. In the ancient language, it's called a blood shield. So that's why all of this, and I point to this pool of blood and splattered all over his shirt and face, his blood. I don't know if it's your blood, I don't think it's your blood, but it's a blood shield. And Bartholomew, the last time he tried it, said it didn't take much out of him. And I look over to Bartholomew, who I assume is now looking very haggard, not very haggard, but probably visibly shaken to a certain extent. But he's had it all this time. The priest tried to convince him to use it. He never used it. I talked him into it. I may have used this to convince him. I shake the urn.
I'm like, at this point, I can only imagine Spencer being quite not only shocked and like scared and relieved at the same time, but also quite angry at being shot and like being tested upon and not even told.
At this point, there is an immense crash from downstairs. The nearest analogy I can give is imagine like a battering ram is just smashed open the front door, shattering it into shards of wood, and you hear the sound of running feet pounding from 2 or 3 floors below.
Okay, so guys, that's probably the craziest end of an episode we've ever had, and probably a few questions on what the fuck just happened and how is Spencer seemingly not dead or damaged. So we alluded to the fact that fucking Dave or Bartholomew has had a spell since like episode 3 of the podcast that he's never used. And
true story.
I've been trying to convince him to use it, and he kind of forgets about it at times of need. And we decided we're going to use it. Spencer knew nothing about any of this, and myself, Dave, and Joe had a chat about what we thought would happen. So I'm going to throw it over to Joe first, probably. Joe, do you want to explain roughly how we decided what we're going to do?
Okay, so basically, the last session, so episode 0 of Return to Innsmouth, was meant to be much, much shorter. The interview was in only a small part of the what we'd planned to do. And unfortunately, somebody slept in, Aaron, and didn't turn up to the recording. So we ended up extending it and making much more of it, which actually turned out pretty well.
Having
so
fun
cool.
with it, yeah.
So, but at the time we were thinking, like, how can we, you know, punish Aaron for him not turning up? So we came up with this idea of using the spell and, you know, using both Mick Tobin and Bartholomew Ormond's increasing insanity to maybe come up with something quite fun.
The original plan was a bit different, though. The original plan, I think it was Dave, was it your suggestion to originally put the spell on either myself or yourself, and he walked in on us shooting each other? Or shooting one of us?
Yeah. And then we suggested that we should shoot him.
Yeah, because...
that was Joe's original thing, so I was going to shoot you.
Yeah, because nobody stands up us. Fuck Aaron, essentially. But the beauty of it, like, to be fair to Aaron, we all love our characters. Probably me less than anyone. I just love doing stuff and making stuff exciting in games. Aaron genuinely, like, if he has a child, he may change his second name to Randall and call him Spencer. He loves his character that much. I mean...
I don't know. Aaron, how did you feel running through it? Because, I mean, this last hour, I don't know, however long the podcast is, has basically been one giant practical joke that the three of us have played on you. I mean, what...
I don't know. I feel a little shocked, a little maybe dirty.
We're all dirty, baby.
Maybe a little teeny bit angry. But...
I mean, what almost happened? Let's be honest.
Let's be honest. I think they both nearly got shot in the face.
I kind of wanted, like, there was a general discussion of what if he shoots us. I was like, if he shoots anyone, it should be me, because I'd probably be least upset by it. I was perfectly happy to die for how hilarious I thought this would be. And it was... I'm shocked you didn't shoot me. If it was me...
I was very, very close
to
firing back.
I would have went Max Payne on people.
The pure shock... And the pure, like, just instant, it literally is just shock that went on there. I couldn't move. I didn't know what to do. So that was a very well played, should I say.
It's worth saying as well that, I mean, a couple of weeks ago when we got together to record the last episode, we talked about some ideas of how this was put together. And we had a plan, sort of me, Dave, and Owen, to meet up today and really sort of say how it was going to come out and what we were going to say. Unfortunately, Aaron, completely out of character, turned up not
early.
Just on time, but half an hour early. And so we never actually had a plan to... we never actually got time to talk about how it was going to play out. So genuinely, for all three players, this was completely unscripted, unplanned, completely improvised.
A little word to the unlistened. If you ever want to make your own podcast out there and you've heard our show and you're thinking about making a podcast... turn up to it every episode, lest the rest of your team decides to have a bit of fun with you.
Like, to be fair to the whole scenario, like, the only thing we knew was Dave would be chanting. That's the only instruction we had. And then in the Skype call, Joe was, like, talking through the plan, and I saw Aaron Paul was like, "Hey, Aaron, welcome to Skype. Joe, Aaron's here." Joe, Aaron, stop talking. Joe, shut up, essentially, is what I did. In the most... I thought Aaron had copped it, but apparently Aaron is just too trusting of three dickheads.
I am very trusting, and you have now
and we are very
taken
dickheads.
That trust, and you've pretty much shat on it, so I shall not be so trusting in future.
Before we go, it's probably worth talking about how the actual spell worked. It's probably interesting for you guys to know and how it's going to turn up in future episodes. I'll let you over to Dave and Owen.
Okay, so to quickly sum up how the spell works, because Dave is a terrible, terrible friend and person and won't read the rules or even figure out what's happening. Essentially, the spell requires a couple of things. Some magic points, which will determine how strong the shield is, which is called, the spell's called a blood shield. It needs an insignia for the person receiving the shield to be standing in, which is why there's a blue rug that Aaron thankfully kneeled down on to look through a keyhole, which I was worried he'd move back, so shot through the door quickly. And then ultimately the person casting it generally loses sanity. So Aaron, we don't know how much of the shield is left. As players, myself or Dave, definitely don't know how much. Each magic point represents a certain amount of power. I don't know how much. Dave and Aaron don't know how much. Joe knows. So he might have a shield, he might have no shield. He definitely didn't take any damage from that last two gunshots. We know that much. So we know that 3 magic points gives you a shit ton of health. And pretty much, from what I can tell, more or less, if Dave ever uses a spell, becomes invincible, but more insane. fair summation, Gamekeeper Joe?
Yeah, that's pretty spot on. Again, I think with all these things, it's really important to keep some of the spell's knowledge behind the DM screen, as it were. And I always kind of retcon spells. So although this is based loosely based upon a spell within the 7th edition Call of Cthulhu rules, I have my own version of it. Mainly because Dave owns a copy of the 7th edition Call of Cthulhu rules.
He definitely hasn't read it. He hasn't read his own notes on our game. No way has he read that book.
I have read the book. I have read the frickin' book.
No, Dave, if you ask him how a Tommy gun works, genius. That this is where Dave's skills lie. I think it just so happens you're playing a bit more of a spellcaster character in this particular game.
As a question from an outsider, is this something you can instantly cast, or does this take a lot of prep time?
Like Owen says, it needs a magic circle intricately drawn. It needs a chant, a sacrifice, and magic points spent. So no, you couldn't just instantly cast it. That wouldn't
I left out the sacrifice, so that's why we have a delightful little butchered pig in the corner of the room. I want to call him Charlie. Can we call him Charlie the pig?
So guys, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and enjoyed our hour-long practical joke on Aaron for not turning up to our episode. Next week we'll be continuing with the story of Return to Innsmouth, and we've got some pretty cool things planned.
Before we go, I'd just like to say this has been by far the biggest week ever for the podcast, with the number of listens per episode being more than double anything we've had in previous weeks. We really are just a group of mates sharing our games, and the fact that you guys are enjoying them too really means a lot to us. If you do enjoy what you hear, then there are a few ways of supporting the show. First of all, we now have a Patreon site, which you can find at www.patreon.com/howwerollpodcast. And if you could spare a bit of change to make a small donation, it'd really help to keep the show running. Plus, we've got some pretty cool rewards for supporters and some great milestone goals that we're really aiming for. And I'd like to thank our first Patreon, BF Evans, for his incredibly kind donation. Thanks, man. Secondly, I know that not everyone is an Apple fan, but by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes, you give the show a massive boost. And I'd like to thank SJackson48 and Cthulhu Lover for your reviews on the GB site, and for the Organs reviews on the Irish site. Lastly, I'd like to give a really special thank you to R. Lachlan03. He's been working his way through our back catalogue of shows, so he probably won't hear this shout-out for a while, but he's made a fantastic newspaper obituary for the one and only Reverend John, and you can find that on our Reddit page. If you do want to send us any comments, fan art, questions or suggestions, then we are very active on Reddit, Facebook and Twitter, and you can find links to them all and much, much more on our website, howwerollpodcast.com. Again, a massive thank you to all the support this week, and hopefully we'll see you next time.